We're going to have a little chat here today about some of the changes amongst the DEF CON groups and some ideas about hack spaces, inner hack space communication, and extra hack space communication. On our panel, we have Nick Farr, Dave Marcus, and Anarchy Angel. And then let them go through and...
Come on, shots.
Shot. Come on.
5-hour energy shots. Come on. Wake up, people. Let's go.
I know most of you are still in here because you fell asleep in the EFF's talk. So if you're just waking up, we're going to talk first about the DEF CON group's point items. I just became the DEF CON group's coordinator about a month ago. We have some very interesting changes coming along. Yeah, right.
Black needs a beer. Who's got a beer?
Yes, who has a beer? Anybody have a cold beer?
No. Bring Black a beer.
Bring it here. I'll take it. Excuse my voice. I've been yelling at humans all day. So with DEF CON groups, we've had some interesting things. Domestically, everything's pretty solid. You know, we have a pretty good infrastructure. I'm good. Yeah, we have some, you know, domestically, we have a pretty solid infrastructure. People kind of get it.
Better treasure.
They understand what DEF CON groups are. Internationally, we've had some issues. Just to get a few things out of the way, you cannot be DEF CON of a country. So, no DEF CON of India. You can't copy the DEFCON.org website and then start your own up and start charging admission. I mean, it's kind of crazy that I have to be saying these things, but it's true. I'm talking to pretty much all DEF CON groups in India. on that note, it's a privilege to be a DEF CON group, and, you know, treat it respectfully. So, with that, I'm going to go through and let everybody tell you a little bit about themselves. Nick?
No. Thank you, Black Diz. I'm Nick Farr. Most people know me for my work with Hackerspaces back in 2007, back at the DEF CON. Way back then, we organized a trip bringing people from DEF CON to the CCC camp in Germany, where we showed people like Bree Pettis and Elliot and David Holton, a lot of people who went back to the United States and started Hackerspaces based on the German model that was going on over there. And since 2007, there's been an explosion of hackerspaces in the United States, and now...
You fucked up every single one of them.
And Dave has his own opinions on that. And so that's why I'm happy to sort of present just a very brief overview of what's been going on since and some of the, and discussing a lot of the things that have been happening since 2007. Dave?
Sir.
I'm Dave Marcus. I'm known mainly for being Dave Marcus. Doesn't really require a whole lot of other explanation. My day job is being the Director of Advanced Research and Threat Intelligence for McAfee. But with Nick, I helped start a hackerspace in Maryland called Unallocated Space, so I'm happy to share my horrendous, horrible experiences of doing that and working at a disgustingly close relationship with Nick, who is a really tedious human being to work with. So there you go.
I am Mike Guthrie, also known as Anch. I'm the coordinator for DC 503 in Portland, Oregon. I'm also a member of the Hackerspace Brain Silo in Portland, Oregon. And I'm calling bullshit.
On myself. Why not?
Oh, on yourself.
I'm Adam Espedia, also known as Anarchy Angel, and I run DC 414, which is a Milwaukee chapter of DEF CON, and I hack shit.
Fair assessment. So Nick has a little presentation about just in general hack spaces.
And have fun. Yeah, tell me about Renderman's talk, like what happens today.
I don't get a bullshit sign, that sucks.
You are the bullshit sign.
Dude, we should be getting like stock options in this shit. Look.
Why is it? People just asleep?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah, the people who didn't leave are probably the ones who passed out. Yeah. Can I get one of those?
That's where we have these.
Do we have? Like, where's that showing up?
It was showing up like a second ago.
Is that showing up?
Here.
Yeah.
Watch the thing. It was a.
Swapped over.
Is there a function on the screen?
Yeah, no, I mean it was on the screen.
Okay.
We'll show you that it'll detect your display.
I've been running into other dorky stuff, so I believe you, so. There you go.
There you go. That's
there you
up.
Go. There you go. Okay, now.
My problem is I lowered the lid.
Oh, this is a bug too. It does that. Yeah, it don't lower the lid. Okay, there you go.
Okay.
We have to have technical support to start our presentation on Hackspaces.
Hey, I did. They didn't do shit.
All right, we about ready? All right. Hey, is that turned on? All right, guys, what's up? My name is Black Days. I'm the DEF CON Group's coordinator for DEFCON.org. We're going to have a little chat here today about some of the changes amongst the DEF CON groups and some ideas about hackspaces, inner hackspace communication, and extra hackspace communication. On our panel, we have Nick Farr, Dave Marcus, and Anarchy Angel. And then let them go through and...
Come on, shots.
Yeah, shot. Come on.
5-hour energy shots. Come on. Wake up, people. Let's go.
I know most of you are still in here because you fell asleep in the EFF's talk. So if you're just waking up, with that.
Yeah, I think alluding to what Dave was talking about, I've been involved in two hackerspaces that took a little while to get going, and one of which is currently in a struggling phase. And so I wanted to instead sort of focus on the negative. I wanted to focus on the positive and look at what an ideal hackerspace looks like. But before that, if I may be allowed to do so, I'd like to plug my Kickstarter. Some of you might remember a couple of DEF CONs ago, I ate a 20-patty In-N-Out burger as a fundraiser for the Hacker Foundation. And now that I have a Kickstarter that's in process, I said I will repeat what I did several DEF CONs ago if Sierra Zulu makes its $50,000 funding goal by 10 p.m. tonight. That's the URL. The URL. So if it gets funded by 10 p.m. tonight, I will eat a 20-patty burger at the Ninja Networks party, which will probably get blogged and tweeted, and you can see it or join in there. And for every additional K above 50 that gets funded, I'll eat one additional patty.
A stack of 20 patties?
A stack of 20 patties.
You
yeah, you could say that, yeah.
You'll eat a Nick Farr's worth of patties.
There you go.
That's disgusting.
I know. Just like you, Mr. Dave.
It's disgusting.
But getting back to the point, I wanted to, again, focus on the positive. What does an ideal hackerspace look like? But to start off with, a lot of people get hung up on what the definition of a hackerspace is, and I have a very, very simple definition. It is simply a physical space where hackers gather to hack things together. Not that complicated. Hackerspaces go by many, many other different names, but whatever you decide to call it, if it fits that definition, I'd call it a hackerspace. Ideally, the first thing that should come to your mind when you think about a hackerspace is a really awesome group of people who are dedicated to hacking and making things and bringing in more people to help them hack and make things. A lot of building that community is focusing primarily on teaching, learning, and hacking. There should be a constant intellectual simulation going on inside of a hackerspace that's fun. Hacking, in large part, is about play and about discovery. And as a process of that, hackerspaces should always be coming up with new and cool projects. It doesn't matter if it's something that gets boing boing right away, but if it's something that's cool to you and your community and it's new and it's something that hasn't been seen before and it could or does inspire the larger hacker community in some way, that's the kind of thing. Those three things together, people, teaching, learning, and hacking, and coming up with cool projects, are what I believe an ideal hackerspace is all about. Hackerspaces are nothing new. How many people here have been involved actively in a hackerspace? Okay, and then keep your hands up. How many people have attended a hackerspace at least once? Keep your hands up. Okay, now everybody lower your hands. How many people have never been in, driven past, or have access to a hackerspace? Okay, so a minority of the crowd. Most people, those answers get better and better every single DEF CON. But there are hundreds of hackerspaces just in the United States. There's almost 1,000 throughout the entire world right now. And I wanted to go over some of the traps that I think a lot of hackerspaces fall into. Hackerspaces that are really successful, that are great at building a community, teaching, learning, and hacking, and coming up with cool projects you all know about. They're out there. They're constantly in the blogosphere. A lot of them make mainstream media. And what I really wanted to look at were the six sort of common traps that I think a lot of people who get involved in the community and get out there and start a hackerspace tend to fall into. The first trap, and I'm talking a lot of personal experience here, what happened in my most recent hackerspace, an allocated space in Severn, Maryland, is the thought that, you know, we don't do that here. You know, I don't believe in that at all. Real hackers can hack on anything. It doesn't really matter what it is. And ideally, your hackerspace will be looking at things that are beyond your comfort zone. If you're mostly IT people, you'll get into hardware. If you're mostly hardware people, you'll get into the infosec and the coding, things like that, because it's outside your comfort zone. It's something that you want to find out more about. Second really big common trap is the hackerspace. You have all the tools, you have all the equipment, but it kind of just becomes some place that you hang out at after work, party, drink, play games, this sort of a thing, yada, yada, yada. That's all cool. That's a great socializing, and having a social space where people feel welcome to come into is an awesome thing, but it should be secondary to the things that you should be hacking on and working on actively in a hackerspace. Third trap that a lot of hackerspaces fall into, some people call this the founder's curse, is the leader with a vision trap. You have one really strong personality, and everything that happens in the hackerspace sort of lives and dies by the opinions and the whims and what other people perceive that personality to like or dislike at any one given time. Get rid of that. That's a really harmful trap in any kind of an organization that you're in. Successful organizations follow ideas and energy and passion. They don't follow people. And successful organizations welcome all sorts of different ideas, projects, and are always bringing in new people and new ideas and breeding off of that enthusiasm that comes when you have a constant supply of new and excited and talented and passionate people coming in the door. Again, single point of failure is the next big trap that a lot of hackerspaces fall into, where maybe it's not something where you have a bottleneck at the leader, but in various different administrative functions in your hackerspace, or there's one person that always does that one thing. Just like in real life, where you should have backups for everything and start eliminating single points of failure everywhere in your process, you should have backups for your key leaders and admins. One of the really big things, one of the first things they teach you in whatever kind of leadership class you're looking at, is that the best leaders start training their replacement immediately. Because that lets those leaders get up to the next level of whatever organization or movement or whatever it is that they're doing. They know that they can, one, disappear. You know, things happen to people. Accidents happen. People get burnt out. Everybody that's in a critical position, no matter what it is, if it's a critical project your hackerspace does, if it's the treasurer, if it's the person that's responsible for scheduling things, no matter what it is, if it's a critical function, that person should be finding and training their replacement right away. And then the second to last trap that a lot of hackerspaces fall into is what I call the Tasmanian devil trap. Some people refer to this as drama. Some people refer to this as interpersonal conflicts. But regardless of all of that, if you're not learning, teaching, hacking, working on something, or figuring out what you're supposed to be working on, you probably shouldn't be in the hackerspace. So much energy gets burned up on everybody in the space discussing one particular personality who's creating a roadblock to teaching, learning, and hacking in a hackerspace. It's very simple. If it's clear that a person or a thing or whatever is not contributing to the hacking in a hackerspace, they should leave or they should be asked to leave. And then the final problem, which, like anything in life, is always a problem, how do you manage your resources? So many people try to solve a money problem by thinking about different schemes or things that they could do to raise money or different ideas, and that's the wrong focus. If you are having money problems, you should be thinking about how you can bring in more people, new ideas by doing different classes, events, working on cool hacks. If you bring people to your hackerspace, your money problems will disappear. And then that's the brief presentation that I wanted to give on my ideas this year at DEF CON.
Awesome. So. I just want to kind of get some opinions first from our panel members here, and then I'm going to ask for some questions from the audience if you have them. Anch, any type of tips or successes that you've come across, any little pitfalls, but not just negative, like what's like some pro tips as far as going for a positive movement?
Well, hackers are inherently lazy. I'm really trying to build the DC 503 group, and we have some momentum, and then we have some non-momentum, and so you kind of have to get people motivated to want to do stuff, and some of that is projects, and some of that is just being somebody that's an active personality, and some of it is me, and some of it is not. You know, I get busy, and I have a full-time job. My boss is sitting in the audience right now looking at me, you know, giving me the evil eye, you should be working. You know, I have a full-time job, and yeah, we get busy, and we don't schedule meetings, or I miss a meeting, and the next meeting I show up to, people aren't there, or, you know, it just kind of happens. But so, you know, being consistent is, becoming consistent is something that you know, as a hackerspace or even as a group, it needs to happen. I mean, if the space that I'm in is actually pretty cool. They meet every Thursday. I mean, they have open house every Thursday. We have exploit night every Wednesday night, you know, every other Wednesday night, something like that. It's pretty cool. But being really consistent and understanding that people are people and people get busy is really important.
Enough. Dave?
Yeah, consistency. One thing I think we kind of failed on from the beginning, and it's our own fault, is not having a lot of interesting classes that ran at a scheduled period monthly, right? So we would have weeks that were really, really active when we had a lot of people at the space, and then we have periods of time when it wasn't. So by not having a consistent schedule of doing something on a Wednesday night every single week, something on a Thursday night every single week, it defaulted to the clubhouse environment very, very quickly. So really having an idea of 6 or 7 events to run monthly is really, really helpful. Whether it's a night dedicated to hardware, same night monthly, or same night weekly. Those kinds of things do a lot to bring people in on a consistent basis. And then make sure you pick your space correctly, where you physically locate it. Location, 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 right? Being located next to a school is a good thing. Being located in industrial areas are a good thing, just because you get people who are kind of naturally hackery in certain ways, or that are in a scholastic area, you get lots of interest from students. If your space is located in the wrong area, you could be behind the eight ball from the beginning. So location, consistency, and, you know, like Nick had talked about before, the financial model is a real big deal too. We tried a very different financial model at Unallocated, didn't we, Nick? You know, a keyholder-centric financial model where the keyholders were responsible for the financial running of the space, and everything was just donations. We had no membership or anything like that, and it was a good idea for some things and a really problematic idea in other areas. And you can't change your financial model in the middle of it either. Then you become the Netflix of hackerspaces, right? You change your financial model when you're not offering anything new. Everybody gets pissed off at you. And if you don't have anything new to offer, you don't have anything new to offer. So,
Something else that's I found is really important is having space for people to actually work. The space that I'm involved in right now, it becomes cluttered really, really fast. I mean, you get donations of hardware and you know, various pieces of stuff that people don't want, and you have people that don't turn it away.
You become their drop point. Yeah, we had that same problem too. People would just drop CPUs off to us.
Yeah, I'm not kidding you. I walked in the space one day, and there was a stack as tall as me of rack mount PCs that were worthless.
And if you're doing technology disposal, that's real cool. If you're a technology disposal place, because then you can make money from the recovery of the circuit boards. But if you're not, what you are is somebody else's fucking warehouse.
Yeah.
You know? And that shit takes up space real damn quickly. And when you've got 800 CPU towers. And you don't have a project you're working on?
It's true. I mean, DC225, man, I could create a Google with the Beowulf clusters. I mean, I have a metric shit ton of racks and rack-mounted servers. If I get one more Dell 2860, I think...
We have a wall full of those huge CRT monitors and stuff like that, right?
Yeah.
And you don't want to turn it away because you may have a cool project you want to do with it. More often than not, it's going to be a big fucking wall of CRT monitors. You know. But if you make it into like an art project or something like that, it becomes interesting to do. But you don't have a lot of people that will say, I'll take that big pile of hardware and turn it into an art project all the time.
There's a reason corporations pay $20,000 to recycle a pile of crap.
Or another thing that I kept saying, and I never had time to do myself, is if you've got a big pile of whatever it is, start taking it apart. Figure out how it works. You don't have to have a solid idea of what you want to do with it, but it's junk. Yeah, well, there you go. Smaller piles is better than, smaller piles is better. Smaller piles is better than bigger piles, and you learn something by taking anything apart or just destroying it.
Like how to get smaller piles of shit.
Yeah, exactly.
We had tried to rip apart the CPUs into the circuit boards and then tried to attach all the circuit boards together and try to make art out of them and stuff like that. And, you know, it's one of those things where go to your consistency thing, right? You know, it's a great project that everybody works on for 4 hours and then nobody ever works on it again.
And then it never gets cleaned up.
And it never gets cleaned up. I'm of the considered opinion, a good hackerspace starts more projects than it ever finishes, right? Because it really should be about, you know, starting cool projects and stuff. So it's not important that they necessarily get finished, but don't leave a fucking mess.
Yeah. The clean your shit up after you're done is really, really important.
Well, we had a real problem with that, too.
It's a
real problem. And, and that's where I think people get really pissed off at personalities. That's where your personality conflicts come in, is, you'll have some people who end up cleaning up the space more often than others. And that just causes resentment. It's like, don't let that fucker in anymore. He always leaves a mess. You know, or such and such is drunk up in the loft again. Kick him out. You know, it's...
The Loft is an awesome project. You should talk about that.
So,
dude, the Loft is awesome.
And luckily for DC 414, we're still growing. We got maybe 20, 25 people. So, back to consistency, I try to make every single meeting, no matter what's going on. You know, I'll drop everything. But we also have it planned. You know, it's the first Friday of every month, and it's been that way for the last 2 or 3 years, I do believe. And so I mark that on my calendar ahead of time. My bosses know this is what I'm doing. And then back to one of his points was don't make partying a priority. Well, we kind of do. But we don't do it at our meetings. We have two separate meetings. We have a technical meeting where we talk about, you know, technical junk. And then we have another meeting where we just get drunk and shit-faced. And we do that every month, too. But that, the day for that is more fluid, you know. Whenever anyone can get ready to get drunk, we'll all pick out a day. Quite recently, though, we've been doing... yeah. quite recently, we've been doing onto projects... we've been using our social gathering, which is essentially what I call it, for making a room in a haunted house so that, you know, it's we go completely outside of the tech field a lot. We try. Like, for instance, making a haunted house, you know, that's not something that, as far as I know, no other group is doing, which is kind of cool, I thought. And other than that, you know, we just try to... Have as much fun as we can, and still learn something. At the meetings themselves, we don't usually take stuff apart or anything like that, but we try to have a presentation, a couple presentations at each meeting. And the presentations, you know, reach from failing at web hacking to making hyperponic bays for plants. And
plants.
I love plants.
Yeah,
the Northwest.
To lock picking, to, you know, modifying laptops, and just all over the spectrum. We try to keep it all over the place because we have a couple of guys that are techies. We have a couple of guys that are hardware freaks, and then we have a couple of guys that don't know anything about everything, but know a little bit about everything. You know? Mm-hmm. So we try to keep the spectrum super, super open. And so far, that's been successful to us. That's probably the key to our success.
And that's one thing we didn't do enough of early on, is we really focused on trying to build out technical stuff, right? Technical, hacking, without really realizing that, you know, you can run a carpentry class as a hacking class.
Exactly,
you know?
Yeah.
Or you can have your laser cutter class, or you can have your whatever. You know, it doesn't really matter what it is. It brings people in who share information and talk about things in a creative way. And it's all hacking when you get right down to it.
Yep.
But I as a founder, I just never considered that early on. It never occurred to me to teach, you know, carpentry at a hacker space. Right.
Yeah.
You know, and things like that. I think they all have their place. And fun. You want to teach something? Get up and teach a class.
Well, plus, you know, it's great for us because then we get to learn something that we knew absolutely nothing about. You know, I had no idea, you know, how to lock pick until we had a lock pick guy come in and just schooled us all. And I had no idea how to make a hydroponic bay until somebody came in and showed me how to do it, you know. And it's great, you know, I get to teach people and I get to learn a whole bunch, which is awesome. You know, you couldn't ask for anything better than that, really.
You brought up a really good point earlier, too. You slot time for fun.
Yeah, definitely.
You know, having fun is a super, super large importance about, you know, what we do. I mean, I do this. Work is not work for me. Work is fun. You know, and hacking is fun, and so you know you need to make time for fun.
I call bullshit on your job comment because your boss is in the audience. Yeah. I call bullshit on your job comment because your boss is in the audience.
Hey, you guys need a set of these. I mean, when he starts speaking, you guys can just
these are awesome. Leave it
off. Great, right?
These are up here when we got here. They're really awesome.
Yeah,
We took the party thing, I think, a little bit too much of the limit when we first started Unallocated, because I
don't
think
you have a ban on, like, liquor or
there was a period of time I thought we were gonna die.
Just gotta say, I gotta say on the ban on liquor,
dude. We were going through bottles of Jägermeister per night for a week at a time. I thought there was a period of time we were going to die. And it set the wrong tone for the space after a while. It turned a lot of people off, rightfully so. You know, we're a bunch of drunken idiots for the first month and a half of the space. That set the tone of the space.
Yeah, I don't know. See, at DC55, we make it a point to get drunk weekly with one another.
Yeah, it was hourly for us.
Yeah, you know, we try to keep the whiskey out of the picture just because, well, I mean, we like the stuff that we have working to still work after.
Our tagline was, we're a drinking space with a hacking problem. And it was well deserved because it was out of control. And again, I think it set the wrong tone for the space, and it was hard to recover from that.
I have to say, your flame vortexes were fucking cool, though.
Yeah,
we are the one home of the fire tornado. Of course, everybody can see that picture on my iPhone up here. But that's what we're known for at Unallocated, is fire tornadoes. We've gotten 30, 40, 50-foot fire tornadoes. What? Yeah, oh, sorry.
It's a giant flaming tornado.
The fire tornado did. Anyway, that's what it is. I'll show you the video of it later if you want to see it. Every time we did a party toward the end, we would set up the fire tornadoes, and they were absolutely amazing.
One of the points that I personally came across as being an issue is too stringent of behaviors being put on the people. Now, there are some liability issues that you do have to look out for as far as like property damage if you lease a space or something like that. But too many restrictions kind of sets the tone of the group into a negative manner. Everybody has their own, you know, regulations internally that are necessary for the group to continue having fun without, you know, catching a building on fire or catching someone else on fire.
I found out laser pointers are killers to DC groups.
Yeah, I wonder how the 90-watt laser works across the room. I've heard this before.
Yep.
And can you give a tattoo with one? That's another one. So, but not going too far.
Are you speaking from personal experience?
Yes. Yes, very much so. You can imagine the people I run with, they all have lasers, and let's just say, yes, you can give an awesome tattoo with a laser. Anyway.
Yep. The focus needs to be on, it can't be said enough, the focus needs to be on the projects and the hacking.
That's right, no matter what it is.
And the fun of it. It really is. If you focus on those kinds of things, you'll have a good hackerspace, but it's remarkably easy to have a screwed up hackerspace. It's remarkably difficult to have a functioning hackerspace. You would think they're completely different.
Well, but one of the things that I've seen is
it's easier to screw it up.
The functioning spaces tend to get together more. Like the functioning spaces, for instance, interspace communication. I know that there's been some headway with other groups as far as getting VPNs connected, darknets connected.
Chaos.
To pool research. Yeah,
chaos
VPN
and stuff. Yep.
And we'll talk about that and kind of give them an overview of that here in a second. But the idea kind of behind what we're working towards is to pool resources that one group has with a sort of a scheduling and job system to get pieces, let's say, machined that you don't have something to print that piece. You can schedule it with another group, pay for the substrate, and have it shipped to you. If you take a look at the Red Bull creation that 23B just did, you know, there were labs sending all sorts of cool-ass pieces. And, you know, they put in, I think, a Null Space Lab sent a bunch of stepper motors via airmail. And just in the middle of it, you saw sort of this project come together in a 72-hour space. And other groups were the ones who supplied a lot of the parts. I wouldn't say the predominance, but I mean, there was a whole lot of intergroup, you know, communication and intergroup sharing of resources that came together and really benefited the groups more so than they were individually. And that's kind of what we're trying to do, is get groups provisioned who are active and functioning. So with that, I'll let you explain sort of what the Chaos VPN is, Dave.
Oh, me. Yes, the Chaos VPN is kind of what it sounds like. It's a VPN run out of Germany, right, Nick? The admins are out of Germany.
Hamburg.
Hamburg, out of Hamburg, Germany, and it's a simple setup depending upon the box or the router that you're running, and it essentially connects you to hackerspaces worldwide and even other hackers individually worldwide. Setups are relatively easy. You can share whatever resources on the Chaos VPN that you want. At Unallocated, we had shared our Minecraft server, our wiki, and we were even looking at sharing out our VM farm, actually, to be used for remote pen testing and stuff like that, and there's a whole list of the Chaos VPN wiki that says this is which hackerspace is connected and these are the resources that they actually share out. So if you're looking to do Jabber or you're looking to do open Quake tournaments or something like that, you can hop onto the Chaos VPN and do it, or you can get on the communal bulletin board or the communal wiki and say, I have these resources I'm willing to share, you have these resources you're willing to share. And it's one of the underused technologies I think there are. I think there's something to be said for, you know, hackers interconnected and hackerspaces interconnected.
Yeah, that's a pretty big focal point going forward, at least from my perspective, being a coordinator, is getting resources for people to share. So just kind of look in the next coming months for your DEF CON groups. There's going to be a darknet that's going to come up, sort of an unofficial intergroup darknet that's actually been in the work between a few spaces in the South. I'm based out of Baton Rouge, Louisiana, and you know, we happen to have a whole bunch of hardware that was given to us, and so we've been kind of setting it up. We have a VM farm. We have an elastic computing environment, so other people could spin up things. But the idea is just behind it all, connecting. And I don't know, I think Anarchy Angel and the groups in the Northwest, I don't know how well, but I know regionally the DEF CON groups do communicate together quite a bit.
We really don't communicate with a whole lot of other groups. We subscribe to their mailing lists and whatnot, but I don't know. I guess we're small fries to most of them. At least the Chicago one, they are not, which is really the only one in our area. I've talked to many people that want to start one, but like he said, hackers are generally lazy. And when I say, you know, oh, we'll start a hacker group, they're like, oh, fuck that. The only other major group in our area would be Chicago, and we just haven't had too much success in communicating with them. But that's probably mostly my fault because I haven't really tried.
Fair enough. I mean, but the idea is to get a forum in an area where those groups can easily communicate with one another. Also, DEF CON forums is a great place to find other people in your area. I mean, there's a whole section for it.
Yep.
But just to provide those resources is kind of where we're headed, because it is an isolated sort of cell arrangement where people don't step out. They don't drive 2 hours to go meet people, but they also don't use technology for, you know, telepresence to help kind of get people together. And a little bit more of that going forward, an easy-to-use resource is kind of what we want to offer. And with that, I think, you have anything else to add, Nick?
Should take questions.
Yeah, that's what I'm about to say. With that, if anybody wants to walk up, there's a microphone right here. We got, you know, what, 20 minutes? Step up, ask any questions. One guy. I like this guy.
How's it going, guys? This is really cool because I'm from laboratoryb.org. We're out of Burlington, Vermont. A bunch of guys running the DEF CON here. Out there. We've had our space for about a year. We had a false start 2 years ago, found another space. What's your experience been with your relationship with the greater community? Like, we've recently been featured in the local newspaper, along with a number of makerspaces and fab labs and things popping up all over. What are the best practices in terms of, like, that relationship? How do you see that working?
That's going to be dependent on a lot of your members, right? You know, for instance, if we've done real good with Reddit groups and things like that, because we've had people at the space who are Redditors, you know, so they've talked it up on Reddit a lot, and we've gotten a lot of publicity through that. We've done pretty good at one or two local universities. They've come in for lockpicking night, you know, they posted on the boards about it and stuff like that. But that comes down to, I think, sometimes to your local members and what they do, and then them leveraging their own communities. If you got a lot of young students, you'll get many mad activity from, you know, from their student body and stuff. And great things like lock picking night is, who doesn't want to learn how to pick a lock, right? I mean, everybody will come in for that, especially if they're, you know, kids in school. So the more networking you can do, the better, you know. Nick, you've had more experience than I.
I mean, again, it depends on the area, but the three big things that that I think always work really well. One, and just in order of simplicity, one, just writing press releases. There's a lot of lazy media out there that is looking for somebody to write articles for them. So write the article that you want to appear, and just send it out to as many news organizations as you can. This works better in smaller areas where there are more small town newspapers and or small town radio stations and things like that. Not so much in big cities. The second thing is get excited about other Hackerspaces projects. You know, post comments on their blog, their Facebook group, tweet at them. If you see other Hackerspaces doing cool things, reach out to them so that when you have something cool about it, you can go to them and say, hey, you know, this project looks a lot like yours, or we were excited about your project, can you be excited about ours? I mean, and those sorts of things will just happen automatically. And of course, the third thing is reaching out to people at cons. Mm-hmm. You know, that's simple enough. You're just walking through the hallway, you're going to hear a conversation of somebody's hacking on something that you're hacking on. Feel free to butt into that conversation and say, oh, hey, I was doing this, or I was hacking this, or I solved this problem, or I have this problem that I'm running into. Do you have a possible solution for it? That basically those three big things. And in addition to press releases for number one, making friends with journalists anytime that there's, and like writing letters to the editor if they're, you know, talking about, ooh, bad, evil hackers doing bad, evil hackerish things, mm-hmm. reach out to them and write them like, no, we're good, I mean, not that, we're real hackers. And this is what real hacking is, that what you're writing about is not what hacking is about. That's a criminal element. And any human activity, there's going to be a criminal or illicit element to it.
Jumping on that, consistency too in the media stuff is a real big deal, right? Mm-hmm. You know, if you're going to establish a blog or a Twitter presence, it really does come down to consistency. You know, one of the best people at it I know of is Grex down at Nova. All right, he consistently blogs about local hacker events that are happening down in the Nova area, Northern Virginia. And he blogs multiple times per week. He tweets multiple times per day in some instances. So there's a lot of mindshare about Nova Hackers, because he's always putting information out there and sharing information. He also gives shout-outs to other hackerspaces and everything else. He's probably one of the better examples I've seen of someone who really knows how to talk about it and chat it up correctly and do it in a very genuine way, and he's really consistent about it.
Also, having a spot for other groups in your area to meet in your space mm-hmm. is a really, really good way to get the word out about your space. You know, if you can get the 2600 group to meet in your space.
Or your lugs.
Or your lugs,
bring them in.
Bring them in, because they're going to see that you've got a cool space, and you're going to get people working on other projects outside of those meetings in your space as well.
So community outreach, dude. Like, you know, nothing gets the newspaper better than people that you thought were bad doing something good in the community. And, you know, that little dynamic, I don't know, is newsworthy to a lot of even the tech writers for your local paper. They'll want to get in on that. I mean, I don't know. Like, sometimes it's even non-technical. Do a food drive. Go feed the hungry. I mean, you know, go hack your community. I mean, if you really want them to get, you know, your attention, that's make them your project.
It's all on the table.
So,
yep.
Great.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks, man.
Thanks, man.
So, what can you do about a neutral, negative, or defunct hack space? I mean, especially when they're claiming that they are the official hack space of the area.
Start a new one.
There's no such thing.
Yeah, I mean, so you're talking about, like, spaces or groups?
Break into their hackerspace and change their fucking locks. That's what you do, all right? So those tedious bastards can't get back into their building. Shut them down. Start your own space. Honestly, you start your own spin-off space. If you don't like the vibe at Hackerspace A, go and start Hackerspace B.
Yeah, there is no special thing. I deal with this routinely. A group starts up in an area where there was a guy who wants to retain some sort of control over a group that really doesn't exist. Yep. And we always say first, you know, communicate with them. But if they're being an ass, start your own. I mean, nothing works better than success at getting rid of the defunct ones. You know, I mean, just one up them. It's the best thing that I got for it. I mean, does that answer your question?
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah. Huh? I mean, you want to build a better hackerspace. Okay. You know, and then make a point of telling them that you're better than their hackerspace, by the way.
The problem is that they're going to the press in places like that. Putting a bad environment in the area.
Fight fire with fire. Go to the press back.
Just hack.
Yeah, say, hey, another one started up, and this is what we're doing.
Build space and hack.
I mean, you don't have to go head to head.
There is no official hackerspace of anything. And that's the thing. If they go to the press and say we're blah 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 blah, if they don't have anything to show for it, they're going to look like the charlatans they are.
Okay.
And they should be probably ridiculed by the rest.
And in the meantime, while they're right, and in the meantime while they're making fools of themselves, come up with something cool.
Yep.
Yeah, more than likely they'll end up on like attrition or somewhere like that, and things fall off quickly from there.
A lot of those go away after a while, too, don't they?
Yeah. They fade off.
They'll just burn out and die eventually anyway. It's been my experience is that, you know, they'll go away. Right. You guys will still be there hacking it up.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
Dude, shot.
There you are. I'm going to hit somebody hard.
You're going to hit somebody with those things, Dave.
That's the goal.
Yeah, yeah, no, right?
It's in the right zone, so I'm only going to hit those two guys right there. So
pedestrian. Pedestrian.
I'm still picking my next seat very carefully around here.
Speak up.
Sorry. I used to be able to speak before last night. When you started this conversation off, you had mentioned that you had gone to Germany to see what they did in their spaces. Can you tell us a little bit about how they are different, and maybe speak in terms of maturity and how their groups have evolved, whether they're more stable, whether they're accomplishing more, that sort of thing?
As far as how they're different, what I'd Google for something called the hackerspace design patterns. That's basically that will illustrate, in essence, what they do and how they're different. And it's not to say that what's going on in Europe as a whole, it's not like a shiny, rosy, happy paradise. They're just 7 or 8 generations ahead of where we are.
And that's a real big deal. You know, I was, Nick and I were talking about this before, is I was in, the last time I was in Berlin, I went to Seabase for the first time, and they've been around for a while. I don't want to say they have a roadmap, but it's a mature space. You know, it's a mature space with developed areas and an established set of members and people that go there. It's hard to say, you know, how they've gotten there, with the exception of maturity over the years, but it's a developed, dedicated area. But they're not all that much different template-wise, honestly, than unallocated or any of the other spaces I went to. They were different size-wise, but it was the fact that they had mature, broad memberships. And I really think at the end of the day, it's the people at the space that make the space, right? And that's probably what I would always default to, is the people will make a good space.
So in a sense, what you're saying, there's a critical mass involved that time has just allowed them, critical mass. Time has given them that opportunity to grow and create the critical mass that maintains them.
Yep.
But thank you.
But I'll also add to that I think if you look at the growth patterns of hackerspaces in Europe and growth patterns of hackerspace in the U.S., we've grown much, much faster than anybody could have imagined, going from 2 or 3 places that you could call a hackerspace to hundreds in the space of really 3 years is something remarkable. And the fact that, two DEF CONs ago, a bunch of people were coming up to me and asking, like, how do we start a hackerspace? How do blah, 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 blah. Nobody asks that question anymore because it's something that's been done hundreds of times. You can Google this answer very, very quickly. And that's something that we have a lot to thank the Germans for the design patterns, and I think that we will get up to that level of maturity quickly. But right now we're sort of in the first kind of decline phase. With anything that grows very rapidly, you'll see a little bit of a decline before you get the next big acceleration in growth.
Thank you.
Thanks, man.
Hey, I'm Saitek from Alpha One Labs, and we're kind of in the trap of like the leader with a vision type of space, and it's worked out for us for 3 years in the way that we can maintain the space and keep it going, and there's not too much fluctuation financially. However, I feel like the people want to be more of a bazaar and branch out and just be their own entities, sort of. And I was wondering, What would you suggest to facilitate a safe moving out of that type of role into more of a widespread facilitating space? I mean, we've even had the problem of someone leaving our space and starting their own space as well, so we'd like to comment on that type of thing.
Yeah, I'll tell you. I mean, projects fork. Hackerspaces fork. Forking's generally a good thing. It doesn't always happen for the best of reasons. It usually happens because there's a personality conflict, but that's good. There are now two hackerspaces where there are one, two communities where there used to be one. As far as, you know, what the leader should do, you know, and I've, there's, you know, it was a group of, say, two or three people who started hackerspaces and then were sort of nudged out or didn't feel comfortable or left for whatever reason. And that group now, I mean, we could probably have a panel discussion of 20 people who've been edged out of their hackerspaces for whatever, or felt like they had to leave their hackerspaces. In a lot of ways, if somebody, usually the people, the personality types that it takes to start a hackerspace are very strong personality types, just to get everybody going, to plow through all of the obstacles that it takes. And then usually when that person, you know, is no longer needed to be in that sort of leadership visionary role, the best thing for them to do to let the space grow and mature is usually just to step aside entirely. Yep. And not go off and start a new hackerspace, but go and be a regular peon member of another hackerspace and let the hackerspace grow and mature in and of itself. You know, people establish certain patterns at the beginning of any kind of a relationship, and for whatever reason, those patterns will persist. And until you feel that those patterns have been broken, it's usually better to just absent yourself.
Cool.
Thanks.
Dude, thanks. Shot. Watch out. Incoming. All right, we have, what, maybe 4 minutes? Or 2 minutes.
Yeah, I'm actually going to pack up and leave.
Okay.
I got to go to another talk, so.
Okay, all right, 5 minutes.
All right, next question.
Yeah.
I have a question for the newer groups.
You want to come to my talk, too. Let's go.
I want to go to your talk.
Go ahead, man.
Yeah. When we talk about growth, especially for the newer groups, should they be taking more of a messianic approach of actually going out and trying to get members? Because the people that do want to be in a local, they're going to find the group. I mean, how much effort should really be put into growing the group?
Well, all right. So, like, membership drives, if you will, kind of the things behind it. You can go out and... we have a lot of people come to our group who drive for like an hour and a half because they really want to be part of something. But if you're in that lull phase, getting drives, just by putting your group out there, mentioning where you're at, making it good public awareness as to, hey, we're going to be on Tuesday at this place once a month or every week, and make it something that isn't, that's openly accessible, you know, whether it be like our group plays trivia every Tuesday at a local bar. And that makes a real sort of easy entry. And other people in the room hear you, they see you as a cohesive unit, and they kind of gravitate towards you.
Let me add to that, too, is look at non-hacker spaces or non-hacker places or non-IT places, right? I think one of the most important things to do is make hackers out of non-hackers, right? You take your non-hackers and turn them into hackers. To do that, you have to go to the places that the non-hackers are, right? So if you're looking to expand the base, it's a good thing to reach out to some of those areas where you wouldn't necessarily find hackers necessarily, but looking into those other communities. Schools are great places. Engineering universities are great places. Things like that. Reaching out to those kinds of pockets of people are good ways to bring in new blood because they think differently than we do, and I think we become better hackers by bringing in broader sets of talented people.
I could add to that by saying what's worked for us a lot is word of mouth. Word of mouth has been great for us. We've gotten probably 50% of our membership that way. The other 50% usually find us on defcon.org, so that's an awesome resource.
We've got 1 minute.
Oh, and, yeah, 1 minute, okay. Yeah, that's been awesome for us, and we hand out flyers, and we also have a area that all the groups in Milwaukee use, and for that has been great for us. As you know,
I hate to cut you short, but I'm getting the signal that it's time. We do have a Q&A session directly across the hall in the Q&A room. If you have any questions or whatever you keep ask. But sorry, I want to thank you all for coming out. I hope to see you all soon around the conference. Just come by, say hi. Have a great day.
Cool. Yeah.